fluid as he cleaned me up. After he finished, he straightened my dress, his eyes gleaming with amusement and lingering desire.
"Well?"
he drawled, his voice husky.
"If you need another favor, anything at all, I'm right here and willing."
My laugh melted into a smile when he kissed me. I'd ruined my dress, underwear, and makeup, as well as his shoes and pants, and I didn't know how we would get out of here without people knowing exactly what we'd been up to, but I didn't care. I was too sated and content, and for tonight, at least, none of my worries could touch me. Chapter 33. Sloane. After Saturday, I could add the Valhalla Club bathroom to the list of places I'd never look at the same again. After my office, my kitchen, Javier's living room, and, well, pretty much every place we'd had sex. It was a great cap to the night, but blowjobs and orgasms aside, the gala also kicked off step two of Operation Perry Wilson, which officially commenced that Monday. I had just stepped off the elevator and into my office when a breaking news alert popped up on my phone. "Soraya engaged in scandalous sex affair with married influencer?" the headline screamed. It was a rhetorical question. One click took me to Perry's blog, which expounded breathlessly on the alleged affair using details my friends had fed into the grapevine. The gifts, the secret weekend getaway in upstate New York, the airplane bathroom blowjob during a brand trip both Soraya and Bryce had participated in over the summer. It was salacious and dishy and completely untrue. But Perry wasn't known for his fact-checking. His post was chock-full of allegations without proof. I smiled. He'd bought the whole story hook, line, and sinker.
"Is it true?"
Jillian asked breathlessly. She was already at her desk, her coffee mug full and her computer zoomed into a photo of Soraya and Bryce on their brand trip. Perry's blog branding was splashed across the top of the screen.
"Is Soraya really sleeping with Bryce? I totally shipped them together before he got married, but
Jillian," I fixed her with an arch stare. "Is Soraya our client?" She sighed.
"No."
"Focus on our clients, please. What's the status on magazine profile pitches for Ayana?" After some minor grumbling, Jillian updated me on the pitches. I sent a quick text during her tangent about how much she hated a certain editor. Me. "Your turn." Soraya. "On it." Devil emoji. Soraya may not be a client, but her publicist and I were friends, and we'd come to a mutually beneficial agreement, locked into place by an ironclad NDA. Like I'd said, I needed an army to take down Perry's social media accounts, and Soraya happened to have one of the largest, most terrifying fan bases on the internet. They'd once taken down a huge makeup brand's website for 48 hours after their director of marketing said they'd never work with Soraya because her image wasn't the right fit. Luckily for me, Soraya was venturing into music and launching her debut album soon. She wanted a big PR splash, and a sex scandal meant major PR. No such thing as bad publicity and all that. The fearless social media star also wasn't afraid to go head-to-head with Perry, whom she already hated after he'd invented a nasty nickname for her best friend, another influencer, and driven the poor girl into rehab. Soraya was one of the very few public figures he'd been cautious about attacking directly due to her fans. However, thanks to a few pushes from me, he'd finally caved when the juiciness of the story seemed to outweigh his sense of self-preservation. I entered my private office, my steps lighter than they'd been in weeks. Bryce knew the story was coming, too. I wouldn't drag an innocent into my schemes without their knowledge, but he and his wife had been okay with the plan. The furor over their wedding had died down, and they were interested in keeping the public's attention on their relationship. After Soraya posts her denial video later, accompanied by photos and receipts showing her in Europe during her alleged upstate getaway with Bryce,
it was only a matter of time before her followers ripped Perry apart. Taking Perry down wouldn't solve my pen dilemma, but it gave me a semblance of control, which I desperately needed. Between dating Javier and Perry's sabotage, my life had spun out of control after Spain. I turned on my computer and resisted the urge to check the updates Javier had given me about Penn again. Things could have changed after he'd handed me the files, but I hoped that the upcoming holidays meant George and Caroline wouldn't do anything too rash. They kept Penn out of the spotlight as much as possible, but they'd still get questions if their youngest daughter was mysteriously shipped abroad right before Christmas. The only force stronger than their desire to spite me was their desire to keep up appearances. That meant I had until the new year to figure out a solution, because never seeing Penn again was not an option. I spent the morning and better part of the afternoon taking calls and closing email chains before the holidays. I was reviewing the Sports World interview with Asher when the door flew open. I lifted my head, expecting to see Jillian or maybe Javier. Shock rippled through me when I saw my sister's slim form instead. "You bitch!" My eyebrows winged up at her scathing greeting. Georgia was usually subtler than that. "That's a matter of opinion, but I'm only a bitch to people who deserve it," I said, overcoming my initial jerk of surprise to offer a cool smile. "For example, people who show up uninvited to my workplace and attack my character before I've even had my second coffee." Georgia came to a stop in front of my desk. Red splotches mottled her flawless skin, and a muscle twitched beneath her eye. I'd never seen her so upset, not even when our grandmother left her vintage Chanel collection to me instead of Georgia in her will. "Bentley told me what you did," she snapped. "Really?" This was going to be good. "Please, what did I do? Enlighten me."
"You tried to fuck him. You called him, pretended you had something important he needed to know, and asked him to meet you at the same time as the Windsor Rose Society's annual post-Thanksgiving ladies' brunch because you knew I'd be occupied that day."
Her blue eyes flashed with animosity.
"Trying to seduce your pregnant sister's husband? That's low even for you."
"Not any lower than fucking your sister's fiancé in their living room on New Year's Eve." Georgia's mouth thinned.
"Oh, please. That was years ago, and Bentley had a good—"
"Spare me your bullshit, Georgie." She hated when people called her that, which was why I did it as often as possible. "I'm not rehashing the same conversation we've had multiple times in the past, but I'll tell you this. We're not the same people we were back then, and I wouldn't touch Bentley again if you paid me $1 million. I returned to my computer. "You want him so bad? You can keep him."
"You're many things, Sloane, but I didn't think you were a liar."
Georgia tossed her phone on my desk.
"You met up with him on Sunday. Don't deny it."
I glanced down. Motherfucker. Bentley had somehow snapped a photo of me at the bar when I was ordering my drink and distracted. His hand was also in the frame, displaying his favorite Rolex. I didn't know what had possessed him to do that. Insurance, maybe, or blackmail. But the man was truly dumber than a box of rocks. The photo was more damning for him than it was for me. "I did meet up with him, after he called me and said he wanted to talk." I slid the phone back across the desk. "He's the one who propositioned me, Georgie." I didn't go into detail about what he'd said, yet. It happened so fast, I almost missed it. A flicker crossed George's face, just long enough to make me think there'd been trouble in paradise before Bentley and I ever met up.
"You're lying."
"Am I lying about the Lalique vase you threw at his head?" She went deathly still. The vase was a small, specific detail that I would have never come up with on my own, unless Bentley told me. Georgia hadn't made a habit of throwing expensive housewares growing up.
"That doesn't mean anything,"
she said, her complexion several shades paler than when she'd entered.
"It could have just come up during your conversation."
"Believe me, don't believe me. It's not my job to convince you of your husband's infidelity." My voice cooled another degree. But there's an old saying, Georgie. If he cheats with you, he can cheat on you. I paused, letting pettiness take the wheel. There's also another saying. Karma's a bitch. The splotches from earlier made a glorious return, spreading across Georgia's face and neck and blanketing her skin with a mask of bright red. This is why no one wants to be around you, Sloane, she hissed. Whenever she felt threatened, her claws came out, and right now they gleamed sharp and deadly beneath the lights. You're a cold-hearted snake. You always have been. You didn't even cry when Mom died. What kind of sick, heartless monster doesn't shed a single tear when their mother's gone? Ice rushed to fill my veins, freezing me from the inside out. I could handle anything she said about us, Bentley, or the estrangement, but in true Georgia fashion, she'd zeroed in on the one weakness I had left. The idea that there was something wrong with me, that I was broken somehow because I didn't feel the way normal people should feel. The fear that I was a monster in human clothing, devoid of compassion and unable to form genuine connections. I knew that wasn't totally true. After all, I loved my friends and Penn, and I connected with Javier more than I had any man in the past, including Bentley. But fear often overrode fact, and Georgia had ripped the stitches off my wounds with alarming alacrity. I stood, taking comfort in the way I towered over her. My sister had an uncanny ability to make me feel small, but I would rather die before I let her see it. Get out of my office. The quiet command lashed out once in warning. Georgia ignored it. Thank God we got rid of Rhea. When she sniffed weakness, she was like a shark hunting blood. She was a terrible nanny anyway, and I would hate for Penny to grow up with a lying traitor in the house. How much money did you bribe her with? Get out of my office. Speaking of getting rid of people, you know Javier's going to leave you. Georgia pivoted to another soft spot with unerring accuracy. I'm sure dating you is a novelty in the beginning. Everyone wants to melt the so-called ice queen. Bentley says that's the only reason he proposed. He liked knowing he was the one who tamed you. But he quickly realized his mistake, didn't he? She tilted her head, her beautiful face vicious. Now let's take Javier. Rich, gorgeous, used to having fun. How long do you think a guy like that will stay with someone like you before he gets bored? He doesn't—
Ever since we saw you at the hospital, she's gotten more paranoid. She accused me of checking you out and said I still had feelings for you.
Bentley's voice played from the recording on my phone. Georgia froze, her smirk withering at the sound of her husband's words.
She said she was my second choice and that I'm always comparing her to you. The thing is, she's not wrong.
I didn't take my eyes off my sister's rapidly paling face as the replay of my conversation with Bentley continued. There was a reason I hadn't sent her the audio right after I left the bar. I'd wanted to see her reaction, and it was as glorious as I'd imagined. For once, Georgia was speechless. Part of me had considered keeping the audio to myself, but that was before she stormed into my office, flung accusations in my direction, and ignored my requests to leave. If she wanted to stay so badly, then she could do so on my fucking terms. Her earlier words still hurt, but the satisfaction at seeing her tremble with outrage was enough to temporarily numb those wounds. Worry less about my relationship with Javier and more about your own marriage, I said, my voice cold and calm. It took one chance encounter for Bentley to try and come crawling back to me. I don't want him anymore, of course, nor will I ever want him again. Unlike other people, I prefer partners who understand the concept of loyalty, but I can easily walk away and never give that man another thought. You, on the other hand, are stuck with him. I offered a casual shrug. Perhaps try marriage counseling or therapy. I imagine being someone's second choice is difficult, but you should be used to that by now. You seem to want only the things I've had first.
George's skin grew increasingly mottled the more I spoke. This was the worst-case scenario for her. Not only hearing the shit Bentley has been saying behind her back, but knowing I, specifically, was privy to her humiliation. She hated losing face in front of her competition, and as much as she and her friends tried to one-up each other on a regular basis, I'd always been her biggest competitor in her mind. If there was one thing Georgia Kensington did not tolerate, it was coming in second place. Now, if there's nothing else, I have work to do. I leaned back in my chair. Javier and I have dinner plans at Monarch, and I don't want to miss them. Monarch was one of the most exclusive restaurants in the city. Even my father had issues getting a reservation.
Whatever, Georgia snapped. Monarch is over anyway. No one eats there anymore.
It was as weak a comeback as I'd ever heard from my sister, and I merely looked at her until she spun on her heels and stormed out without another word. I waited until the door closed and several beats had passed before I let the disdain slide off my face. What kind of sick, heartless monster doesn't shed a single tear when their mother's gone? Thank God we got rid of Rhea. You know Javier's going to leave you. In her absence, George's taunts rushed to fill the void, and without my pride to keep me upright, I was suddenly so, so tired. I closed my eyes and tried to breathe through the rapid patter of my heart. I hated how I'd taken her bait before I cut her off with the Bentley recording. I hated how transparent I was to her, and how deeply her words cut when I should have been immune. I'd known she was trying to hurt me, and I'd let her do it anyway. My hands closed around the edge of my desk. It reminded me of Javier, which reminded me of what Georgia had said. Everyone wants to melt the so-called Ice Queen. How long do you think a guy like that will stay with someone like you before he gets bored? The deadline for our 2-month trial period loomed at the end of the month. I'd avoided thinking about it because I wasn't sure what I would do. Stay in a relationship that made me terrifyingly happy and risk it ending one day? Or run back to the comfort of my solo bubble? That was, of course, assuming I had a choice and Javier wanted to be with me after the trial period concluded. What if he didn't? That would make things easier for me. I wouldn't have to choose, and I could slide back into my old life like it had never happened. Like we'd never kissed or floated in a pool beneath the city skies. Like he'd never held my hand during a race to the hospital or set up a rooftop movie screening on a beautiful fall day. Like I'd never comforted him, trusted him, and the world blurred for an instant. It was so unusual and disorienting, I couldn't comprehend it. When I did, a reckless shock of hope darted through me, and I reached up. My breath stuck somewhere between my throat and lungs. My fingers touched my cheeks. They were dry. I blinked, and the world was clear. Of course it was. Disappointment and relief amplified the pressure crowding my chest. My office suddenly felt too small, the air too thin. I could still smell my sister's perfume, and it made my stomach roil. I needed to get out of here before I suffocated. Jillian was waiting outside my door when I exited.
Sloane, I'm so sorry, she said, her expression stricken. I tried to stop her, but she got past me, and once she was inside, I didn't want to—
It's fine. At least my voice was clear. Thank God for the small things. Please call building security and ask them to place Georgia Kensington Harris and Bentley Harris on the guest blacklist. I want them to call the police if either comes within 1,000 feet of my office.
Consider it done. Jillian worried her bottom lip. Are you okay? Do you, want a donut?
She believed sugar was the answer to all problems. I almost smiled, but my facial muscles didn't have it in them.
No, thanks. I'm working from home for the rest of the day. Assign Tracy to oversee the curated travel interview with the Sings instead.
I gave her a few more instructions before I left and walked to my apartment instead of taking a car. Nothing cleared my head like a good walk. I missed Penn. I missed Rhea. I even missed the tiny sliver of hope that my sister and I could reconcile one day. Which was ironic, considering I'd never felt like I truly belonged in my family. But there'd been a time when I could pretend, and on days when I was too tired to fight, pretending was enough. What happened in my office had effectively killed that hope. It had drawn too much blood. As for Javier, I entered my building's lobby and slid into the elevator right before the doors closed. As for Javier, he hadn't given me any indication that he wanted us to end. He'd been nothing but supportive and caring since we started dating. I'd be stupid to doubt him, right? By the time I got off the elevator and unlocked my apartment door, I'd successfully pushed Georgia's taunts to the back of my mind. I couldn't control how good she was at pushing my buttons, but I could control my reaction to her. And I'd already given her more energy than she deserved. Forget what she said. Focus on work. I flipped on the lights and kicked off my shoes. I had a solid hour and a half to work before I had to meet Javier for dinner. Part of me wanted to ask for a rain check, but seeing him always made me feel better. I needed him after this shit show of a day. Needed. I'd never needed anyone. And the idea that I needed him sent a little shiver down my spine. From fear or pleasure, I wasn't sure. I tossed my tote bag on the couch and was about to slip into something more comfortable when I paused. The hairs on the back of my neck prickled as I looked around. Something was wrong. The apartment was still. Too still. I slowly retrieved the bottle of mace I always kept in my bag while my eyes roved over the TV, the bookshelves, and the door to my bedroom. Everything was as I'd left it that morning, so why? My gaze snagged on the side table. The fish's aquarium rested there, clean and clear. In the aquarium, the fish usually swam at his leisure, his orange scales beaming a hello every time I walked through the door. Not anymore. The fish floated upside down in the tank, his eyes sunken, the pupils cloudy. My mace clattered to the ground, the sound muted beneath the sudden roar of blood in my ears, but I couldn't bring myself to pick it up. Dead. He was dead. He was dead. I didn't understand the wellspring of grief that sprang from my chest or the tremble weakening my knees. I had no proper explanation for the burn in my eyes or the sudden, overwhelming sense of emptiness that invaded the apartment. I wasn't prepared for any of those things because the fish wasn't a cute, cuddly pet I'd bought for myself. He was my pet by default, abandoned by a stranger and housed here temporarily while I waited for the right time to rehome him. He'd never laid his head across my lap when I was sad or brought me a toy to play fetch with because he was a fucking fish. But I'd lived with him for 5 years. And for 5 years, in this sterile apartment, we were all each other had. I sank onto the couch and willed myself to cry, to expel the pressure mounting in my chest. Once. I wanted that relief just once. But as always, I didn't get it. And an eternity later, when the pressure became unbearable and my will to fight eroded to nothing, I simply curled up on the couch, squeezed my eyes shut against the pain, and pretended I was someone somewhere else, because that was the only thing I'd ever been able to do.
Chapter 34. Javier.
Something was wrong. My and Sloane's dinner reservation was at 7, and it was currently 7:15. For most people, running 15 minutes late wasn't the end of the world, but this was Sloane. She was never late. She hadn't answered any of my texts, and when I called her, it went straight to voicemail. I checked my watch again, my worry escalating by the minute. When I'd gotten in touch with her office earlier, Jillian said she'd left 2 hours ago to work from home. Had she fallen asleep? Been the victim of a mugging? Gotten into a car crash and rushed to the hospital? A cold spike of terror pierced me at the prospect. Fuck it. I ignored the scandalized glare from the couple next to me and grabbed my coat from the back of my chair. I wasn't going to sit here like an idiot while Sloane was potentially bleeding to death somewhere. I tossed a $50 bill on the table for the trouble and headed straight to the exit. Perhaps I was overreacting and Sloane would show up right after I left, rolling her eyes and huffing about my jump to conclusions. But I didn't think I was. Even if she wasn't fatally wounded, she was hurt. I could feel it. An insistent cocktail of instinct and intuition that drove me into the back of a cab and toward her apartment. My phone rang right after I gave the driver her address. My pulse skyrocketed, then crashed. It wasn't Sloane. It was Vuk's office.
Good afternoon. This is Willow, Mr. Markovich's assistant. I'm following up on the email you sent this morning.
A smooth, feminine voice flowed over the line.
Mr. Markovich would like to schedule a joint walkthrough of the vault at your earliest convenience, as well as discuss a few matters regarding your partnership. Is now a good time to connect?
Hey, Willow? That's great to hear, but... The cab shuddered to a halt at a stop sign, then ambled along at the speed of a groggy snail. How the hell did I get the only slow taxi driver in Manhattan? I'm in the middle of a personal emergency, so I can't talk right now. A long pause greeted my answer.
To clarify, you're refusing the meeting?
I'm postponing the meeting due to the aforementioned emergency. I covered the phone with my hand and leaned forward. Get me there in 10 minutes and I'll tip you $100. The cab lurched forward with sudden speed. Sloane always complained about how much cash I carried around, but it was damn handy in times like this. I returned to my call. Please give Mr. Markovich my apologies. I'm happy to talk any other time except now. As for the walkthrough, please email me his availability, and I'll put something on the schedule. I hung up before she could protest. I was too on edge to argue or engage in professional small talk. I might have just shot myself in the foot by insulting Vuk so soon after he'd signed on as my partner. But the only thing I cared about right now was making sure Sloane was okay. The cab pulled up in front of her building. I shoved the fare plus an extra $100 at the driver and hurtled out of the car. It was my first time visiting her apartment. We'd always stayed at my place or a hotel. But $200, a picture of me and Sloane on my phone, and a call up to her apartment with no answer persuaded the concierge to let me past. She wasn't answering her phone. Why wasn't she answering her phone? Images of Sloane unconscious on her bedroom floor or drowning in her tub or, fuck, I didn't know, gushing blood after she'd accidentally sliced a crucial artery open in the kitchen filled my mind. Sometimes I really hated my imagination. The elevator stopped on her floor. I sprinted into the hall and blew past a row of apartments until I reached hers.
Sloane! I pounded on the door. It's Javier. Are you in there?
Obviously, she couldn't answer if she was unconscious. I should have asked the concierge to accompany me so they could open the door in that very scenario. I knocked again while my mind raced through my options. I could stay and wait another minute for her to answer. I could race downstairs and grab the concierge. I could call the concierge and ask him to come up, but my chances of convincing him to leave his post were higher face to face. Every second counted, and... Was that a sound coming from behind the door? I froze, willing my heartbeat to slow so I could listen more carefully. That was definitely a rustle, followed by the click of a lock sliding free. Then the door opened, and there she was. Blonde hair, blue eyes, alabaster skin unmarred by blood or bruises. Relief punched through my panic, but it nosedived a second later when I noticed the haunted look in her eyes and the lines of tension bracketing her mouth. Hey. I reached for her but stopped halfway, afraid she might shatter beneath my touch. Sloane was always so strong, but in that moment she looked brittle, fragile. What's wrong?
Nothing.
She stepped aside so I could enter, avoiding my gaze the entire time. Sloane. It was a question, plea, and command wrapped into one. She disliked sharing her problems, but if she kept them bottled up all the time, they'd eventually explode. Whatever she heard in her name made her chin wobble. But when she finally answered, her voice was devoid of emotion.
The fish died.
The... the fish. Her pet goldfish. My stomach twisted. Oh, fuck. I'm so sorry, Luna.
She hated platitudes, but I meant it. When Hershey had died, I'd been inconsolable. It was one of the reasons I hadn't gotten another pet. I didn't want to go through the pain of losing one again.
It's fine.
Sloane turned her head, and I followed her gaze to a sheet of paper on the coffee table. A closer look revealed a neatly typed list of instructions for taking care of the fish. 1. Feed him one sinking pellet once a day, every day except on Sundays. Do not feed him more than the allotted amount or he will overeat. 2. On Sundays, feed him frozen brine shrimp for enrichment. 3. The water must maintain a temperature of 73 degrees Fahrenheit at all times. The rest of the list was obscured by another paper, but she'd obviously put a lot of thought into it.
He was just a goldfish.
Sloane picked up the instructions, ripped them in half, and tossed them in a nearby wastebasket.
He wasn't even really mine. He couldn't leave his tank or make noise or do anything other pets do. He's not the smartest or cutest, and he probably doesn't...
Her chin wobbled again.
I mean, he probably didn't know or care who I was as long as I fed him.
You had him for years, I said gently. It's normal to feel grief over a pet passing.
For other people, not for me.
She took in my jacket and pants. I usually didn't dress so formally, but the restaurant had a strict dress code. Realization wiped some of the stoicism off her face.
We had dinner reservations, didn't we? I'm sorry, I was going to do some work before I left, but I saw him when I got home and I had to figure out what to do with his body. Then I had to clean out the aquarium because there's no use keeping it there when he's dead, and when I was in the kitchen, I saw all these bags of unused fish food that I obviously don't need anymore, so I...
Sloane, it's okay. They're just reservations. I tipped her chin up so her eyes met mine. They're not important. She swallowed, a tinge of pink blooming around her eyes and nose.
No,
she said thickly.
I guess they're not.
She didn't resist when I pulled her into my chest, and when she curled into me just a little bit, I wanted to hold her tight and never let go.
What did you do?
She asked.
When Hershey...
I cried, I said truthfully. A lot. He was my best friend. Luckily, he'd been outside with our housekeeper during the fire that... I faltered at the memory of Hershey running up to me after I'd woken up. He'd refused to leave my side for weeks after the accident, as if he knew I would break if I didn't have something to hold on to. If it weren't for him, I don't know how I would have made it through those first few months. I went to grief counseling for a while, but it didn't work as well as just having Hershey there. Some of the stiffness melted from Sloane's shoulders as I recounted my experience. After I finished, she stayed in my arms before she said very quietly,
Having the fish around helped too. I didn't realize it at the time, but when I was upset, it was nice to have someone, something, to talk to.
She buried her face deeper into my chest, as if ashamed of what she was about to say.
I'm sad he died. I never even gave him a real name.
Well, he's a goldfish, I said practically. There are worse things you could have called him. Her muffled laughter made me smile. I knew how difficult it was for Sloane to admit her feelings out loud. So her seemingly small confession was actually a huge step for her.
Anyway, that's why I was late,
she said.
We've missed our reservations, but if you give me 15 minutes, I can get ready.
Forget about dinner. We'll order takeout and watch the new Kathy Roberts movie. I'd rather be here than at some stuffy restaurant anyway. Sloane lifted her head.
The one where the big city rich girl is forced to move to the Australian countryside and falls in love with the surly but handsome ranch hand?
She asked hopefully. Yep. I'll even let you write your scathing review in peace without questioning your unfair harshness toward the poor actors or screenwriter. Her eyes gleamed.
Deal.
While I ordered the food, Sloane pulled up the movie and grabbed her review notebook and pen. However,
She hesitated as the film studio's opening credits played on screen, and a secret battle waged across her face before she spoke again.
"There's one more thing,"
she said.
"Georgia came to see me at work today. She accused me of trying to seduce Bentley."
My eyes snapped toward hers. Her admission had come from so far out of left field that I couldn't do more than stare, stunned, as she explained what had happened with her sister, as well as with Bentley over the holiday weekend. But the more I listened, the more anger seeped beneath my skin. Slow yet scorching. I kept a tight rein on it for now, but there was no fucking way I'd let anyone to talk to her the way Georgia and Bentley had.
"I should have told you about his call earlier, but I didn't know what he wanted, and I didn't want to put a damper on Thanksgiving."
Sloane tapped her pen against her knee. It was a nervous tic I'd picked up on years ago, shortly after we started working together. It had been one of the few cracks in her perfect facade at the time.
"Georgia really pissed me off, and I was too upset to stay in the office, so I came home. That's when I saw, well."
She cleared her throat.
"I don't know why I'm telling you this, but I figured you should know, just in case anyone tries to make my meeting with him into anything more than it was."
Warmth rushed to fill my stomach, calming my fury. I swallowed the choice words I had for her ex and simply said, "You can tell me anything." Sloane's pen stilled.
"I know,"
she said, even softer than before, and a tiny crucial brick crumbled from around my heart. We didn't say much else after that, but later that night, after the movie ended and our half-eaten food had grown cold, I carried a drowsy Sloane to her bedroom and tucked her in beneath her comforter. She fully passed out before her head hit the pillow. It had been a long, emotionally draining day for her, but I didn't take for granted how comfortable she felt falling asleep while I was here. As I smoothed a stray lock of hair from her face, revealing the curve of her cheekbone and the shadow crescents of her closed lashes, Penn's question from the simulation center echoed in my ears. And I wondered, my mind flipping from the first time we'd met in her office to this moment right here, right now, just how in the hell I'd fallen in love with Sloane Kensington. Chapter 35. Javier. I didn't confess to Sloane. Not yet. I wasn't sure she reciprocated my feelings to that degree. And I needed to figure out a way to tell her without potentially scaring her off. I did, however, stay with her Monday night through Tuesday morning, when she left for work and I called Vuk's office back, apologized, and confirmed a walkthrough of the vault later in the month. I spent the rest of the day dealing with club obligations. On Wednesday, I took care of more unofficial business. The Arthur Vanderbilt Tennis Club was one of the oldest private tennis clubs on the East Coast. A favorite haunt of the polo-wearing, polo-playing crowd, it charged an obscene amount of money for annual access, and was famous for the time visiting tennis superstar Richard McIntyre attacked a ball boy with his tennis racket and knocked several of his teeth out. I hadn't known it was possible to knock someone's teeth out with a racket, but apparently it was, because McIntyre and the club settled the case for a cool $2 million. As a Castillo, I was granted automatic admission. So on Wednesday afternoon, at the tail end of lunch hour, when old money bankers flocked to the indoor courts for a workout and boys talk, I strode through the halls toward the men's locker room. A cacophony of noise greeted me when I stepped inside. Steam thickened the air, partially obscuring the mahogany panels and crowd of finance bros as they prepared to return to work. Nevertheless, it didn't take me long to find who I was looking for. Bentley Harris II held court in the coveted center aisle. He was busy laughing and joking with several guys who looked like carbon copies of him, clean-cut, clean-shaven, and half-dressed in business formal. He had his back to me, so he didn't notice my approach. "Our new receptionist is hot, but she's blonde," he said. "I get enough of that at home. Georgia's been a real bitch lately. She came home Monday all pissed about something." "What?" One of his friends had noticed me and nudged his arm. Bentley turned, his expression souring when he saw me. "Harris?" I donned an affable tone, the type I'd use to greet an old classmate or a friendly acquaintance. "Castillo," he said stiffly. "I didn't realize you were a member of the club." They offered me a courtesy membership when I first moved to New York, I said lazily, my smile hiding the flicker of rage in my gut. Of course, I don't use it often. Why come here when I could go to Valhalla? A wave of embarrassed discontent rippled through the air, subtle but distinctive. I barely used my Valhalla membership either, but everyone knew the tennis club was a consolation prize for people who couldn't get a Valhalla invite, like Bentley and company, for example. Bentley's jaw ticked. His eyes darted to his friends before he forced a laugh. How lucky of us to see you here, then, he mocked. Are you slumming it, or did Valhalla finally kick you out after they realized your spot could go to someone more worthwhile? You mean like you? Sadly, their roster's still full, I drawled. As for slumming, you're right. I came by to see you. The noise from the rest of the locker room dwindled as everyone tried and failed to pretend they weren't eavesdropping. Brewing aggression crackled like static before a storm, and the steady drip, drip, drip of water from the showers sounded unnaturally loud in the tension-laced air. Bentley took a step toward me, his face all smiles but his eyes hot and bright with humiliated anger. If you want to see me, make an appointment, he said with a misplaced sense of bravado. He thought he was safe here, surrounded by his friends and the reek of privilege. I don't talk to jobless losers. My rage from Monday night reignited, not at his jab toward me, but at the vision of him speaking to Sloane with that same snide condescension. That's where you're wrong, I said, still with my affable tone. I'm not here to talk. Then I drew back my arm and slammed my fist into his face. There was a satisfying crunch of bone followed by a howl of pain. Blood fountained from his nose as he staggered backward, and the brewing storm broke, loosening a frenzy of shouts and jeers as the other locker room occupants shoved one another for the best view of the fight. None of them intervened, but the ruckus fueled the anger burning swift and hot through me. I wasn't a violent person. I rarely had to resort to physical brawls to solve a problem, and in Bentley's case, I didn't have to. I wanted to. He recovered enough to rush at me, fists clenched, but I was ready for him. With a swift sidestep, I dodged his wild swing and took the opportunity to deliver a powerful punch to his midsection. He doubled over from the impact and clutched his stomach, gasping for breath. I didn't give him a chance to catch it before I hauled him up by his collar and slammed him against a nearby locker. That was your first and final warning, I said, my words quiet enough to reach only his ears. Touch, talk, or even think about Sloane again, and I'll make what Richard McIntyre did to that ball boy with his tennis racket look like a walk in the fucking park. That includes any indirect contact. If you make her life difficult in any way, you'll be blacklisted from New York society so fast it'll make your head spin. You don't have the power, Bentley sneered, but a glint of fear swam beneath his murky eyes. For someone like him, getting blacklisted was even worse than getting beat up. No, I said softly. Try me. I didn't abuse my family's wealth or last name often, but I was still a Castillo. Even with my inheritance tied up in my reputation as a hedonist, I could crush Bentley Harris II like a fucking bug. He knew it as well as I did, which was why he didn't say a word when I dropped him on the ground like a sack of potatoes. Pass the message along to your wife, I said, my face hardening. The same goes for her. I wouldn't touch Georgia. Sloane's relationship with her sister was her domain. But that didn't mean I had to stand by and watch while Georgia tried to tear down the woman I loved. Loved. It was a strange concept, and not one I'd had experience with in the past. But now that I'd identified it, I couldn't believe it had taken me so long to recognize it. The way my mind mapped every detail about Sloane, both consciously and unconsciously, like I would drown if I didn't inhale enough of her. The comfort I had in sharing my secrets with her, and the spike in my pulse whenever she was near. The warmth, the jealousy, the fierce, overwhelming protectiveness. I loved her, totally and completely, and I'd be damned if I let anyone hurt her. Bentley must have heard the vicious resolve edging my voice, because he didn't attempt to save face in front of his peers,
The others' shouts had died down to grumbles of disappointment at how quickly the fight had ended, but I hadn't expected it to drag on. At the end of the day, people like Bentley Harris were cowards. Cowards never lasted long in the face of those willing to call their bluff. And I knew with bone-deep certainty that he and Georgia would never bother Sloane again. I stepped over Bentley's sprawled legs and walked out, leaving him bleeding and humiliated on the floor. I didn't bother acknowledging the other club members or taking advantage of the empty courts on my way out. My business here was done.
Chapter 36. Sloane. I should have been embarrassed about breaking down over a goldfish, of all things. But it had been surprisingly cathartic, at least with Javier. I suspected I would have felt differently had I opened the door and seen anyone else. But I hadn't, and he'd been here, and he'd stayed. Overnight. That was already a big deal for me because I didn't let random men in my personal space. But he wasn't a random man. He was him. And the house felt so much more vibrant when he was there that I'd thrown caution to the wind and invited him over for the weekend. That was right. I, Sloane Kensington, had willingly invited someone to stay, count them, 1, 2, 3 nights with me, and I didn't dread it. Who even am I? In keeping with the mushy, sentimental aliens abducted my body theme, I also tried to play Martha Stewart on Friday night. The results were mixed.
Have you ever baked before?
Javier leaned against the doorframe and arched an eyebrow at my attempt to make chocolate chip cookies while a batch of cupcakes baked in the oven. Amusement played in his gaze, along with a hint of concern. I'd barely used my appliances before tonight. I usually ate out or ordered in. The kitchen was there for show and the occasional cup of coffee. No, but I'm a fast learner. I frowned at the recipe I'd printed out. Cream together butter and sugars. What the hell did that mean? Was I supposed to stir the ingredients so they were mixed? If so, why didn't the writer say stir instead of the maddeningly vague cream?
Are you?
Javier sounded skeptical, which I didn't appreciate. Yes. Fuck it. I was stirring. You couldn't go wrong with a good stir.
Not that I don't believe you, darling, but your cupcakes are burning.
The wail of the smoke alarm drowned out the last piece of his sentence, and an acrid smell filled my nostrils. Shit! I spun in time to see smoke billowing from the oven. I opened the door and coughed as a cloud of pale gray fumes enveloped me. One burned hand, one opened window, and several fans of a magazine later, the alarm cut off, plunging us into silence. We stared at the tray of blackened cupcakes on the table. Javier dropped the magazine he'd used to fan the smoke into the recycling bin.
Crumble and Bake delivers,
he said carefully.
Perhaps we should order in?
My shoulders slumped. I guess we should. Half an hour later, we curled up on my couch with a Nate Reynolds movie and a box of Crumble and Bake's cupcakes. I'd abandoned my cookie batter in the kitchen, which was for the best, though I wasn't happy about it. I wanted to try something new, I grumbled. Baking is an essential life skill. I was too embarrassed to admit I'd been trying to impress him. It was so stupid and backward, the notion that a woman had to be good in the kitchen. Hello, wasn't that what food delivery was for? But I liked Javier so much, and baking had seemed like a nice domestic activity to add some life into the apartment. I tried not to look at the side table where the fish used to reside. I'd tossed the aquarium days ago, but I still felt its absence.
You know what else is an essential life skill? Living.
Javier teased.
I'm concerned any future baking attempts will result in your kitchen burning down.
Very funny. I tossed a balled-up napkin at him. Next time you try to bake.
I'm good. I know where my talents lie, and it's not in the kitchen.
His arm rested on the back of the couch, his fingertips grazing my shoulder.
But you don't need to cook for me, Luna. I'm happy ordering in.
Because restaurants do it better?
Well, yeah.
He laughed when I knocked my knee against his in reproach, but a smile broke through my disgruntlement. If I put enough time and effort in, I was positive I'd kick baking's ass. There was no way a little sugar and flour could beat me, but I didn't like baking, and I didn't have to be good at everything, even though I could be if I wanted. In better news, Perry's social media accounts got banned, I said as Nate Reynolds engaged in a shootout with a group of mercenaries on screen. Javier always watched rom-coms with me, so I suffered through the action thriller for him. It wasn't as bad as I'd expected. It was actually pretty good, and Nate was delicious eye candy. Javier's eyebrows shot up again, this time in surprise.
When did that happen? They were working last night.
Less than an hour ago, right before the smoke alarm went off, I said. I saw Issa's text on my lock screen. I'd eagerly Googled the story while Javier paid the delivery guy. After Soraya posted her denial video earlier this week, her fans had swarmed Perry's accounts with vicious determination and successfully got all of his social media banned. Apparently, the platforms had denied his appeals, and he'd already uploaded a new blog post begging for help reinstating his accounts. It wouldn't make my father rehire Rhea or help me see Penn, but it was deeply satisfying.
So revenge has been served,
Javier said. Not yet. There's still the matter of his blog. I tapped my phone. A little birdie told me Bryce is suing him for libel and the emotional distress it caused in his marriage.
Plenty of people have sued him for libel before. It's never stuck.
This time is different. There's proof Perry acted with reckless disregard and published that post without verifying any of the facts.
Perry Wilson in court. That would be a sight to see,
Javier drawled.
I'm surprised he was foolish enough to do that. Say what you will about the man, but he's usually more careful about these things.
I shrugged. Man's ego is always his downfall. A tiny smile crept across my mouth. Plus, I may have planted a rumor that an upstart blog was about to scoop him on the scandal of the year. Besides his general mean-spiritedness, Perry was famous for his paranoia over someone usurping his throne. His advertisers are already spooked, I added. If this libel suit has legs, which I think it does, there'll be an exodus, which means he'll need money, which means...
It'll be primed for a takeover,
Javier finished.
Kai Young?
He emailed me yesterday. He said he's open to it if the price and conditions are right. I didn't doubt Kai's ability to squeeze the best deal out of Perry's soon-to-be-dying blog.
So you'll be rid of Perry Wilson the man, and you'll ensure his only remaining platform will be in friendlier hands.
Javier whistled.
Remind me never to get on your bad side.
I don't do stuff like this often, but he deserves it, I said. It wasn't about just me or Javier. It was about the entire culture Perry had propagated. Gossip and rumors had always existed, but he'd taken them to a new, nasty, underhanded level. And yeah, okay, it was also a little personal. My blood boiled every time I thought about his blog post on Penn. Attacking adults was one thing. Dragging a child into it was another.
If I had access to my inheritance, I'd buy it out and save you the trouble,
Javier said.
I've always wanted a little slice of the internet kingdom.
I laughed. I appreciate the sentiment, but the thought of you running a news blog is terrifying.
You don't think I can do it?
I think you can do it too well. Except instead of celebrity news, he'd probably use it to document his adventures, many of which would land him squarely in the middle of the press's crosshairs. I tore off a piece of cupcake, my mind churning. If I had access to my full inheritance. If I ask you a question, will you answer truthfully? I asked. Javier glanced at me, then grimaced and paused the movie.
Uh-oh, nothing good ever comes after that opening.
It's nothing bad, I reassured him. I'm just curious. Why do you want your inheritance so badly? It can't be about just the money. At first glance, it seemed obvious why someone would want billions of dollars. But Javier had his hang-ups about his father's money. And while he blew through cash the way certain celebrities blew through cocaine, he didn't strike me as someone who'd sit on that much money simply to have it.
Why not?
He asked lightly.
Maybe I'm a greedy bastard, plain and simple.
I merely looked at him without saying anything, and after a long, tense silence, his irreverence dissolved into a sigh.
I'm giving half of it to charity.
I almost choked on my cake. That wasn't what I'd expected. At all. Not that I don't think giving to charity is admirable, but isn't that exactly what your father's will stipulates will happen to the money if you don't pull off this CEO thing? I asked.
Yes.
So why? My question trailed off at Javier's smirk. My eyes narrowed and drifted to the tattoo of the Castillo's rival family's crest on his bicep. It represented the duality of Javier, his stubbornness and resentment, but also his dedication and passion. He was the type of person who'd ink a permanent symbol of his war against his father on his body, and I suddenly knew exactly what the catch was. You're donating to charities your father hated, aren't you? His smirk widened into a grin.
I wouldn't say he hated the charities themselves,
he said.
But he certainly wouldn't have approved of donating to some of their causes.
He handed me his phone. The notes app was open, and I scrolled through the list of charities he'd put together. Most of them focused on civil and human rights, with a few arts and music causes thrown in. I'd bet my apartment those were for his mom. She loved art, so she donated a lot of money and time to local galleries. I also flashed back to the organizations listed in Alberto's will. All of them had been business or commerce-oriented. I reached the last name on the list and laughed out loud. The Yale Endowment Fund?
My father was a Harvard guy. He hated Yale with a passion. School rivalry and all that.
Javier's dimples played peekaboo.
I'll make sure he gets a nice library on campus.
You're evil, but genius. I handed his phone back, still laughing. You're an evil genius.
Thank you. I've always aspired to be both those things. Evildoers have way more fun, and geniuses are, well, geniuses.
Javier pocketed his phone.
To be fair, I would have donated to those causes anyway. The fact my father would have disapproved of 90% of them is the cherry on top.
I lifted my half-eaten cupcake. To revenge.
To revenge.
He tapped his chocolate against my lemon raspberry. He chewed and swallowed before adding,
Don't get me wrong, though. I'm definitely keeping some of the money. I like my cars and five-star hotels.
You mean you like trashing five-star hotels? Javier pointedly ignored my allusion to his birthday weekend in Miami.
But I don't need all of it. It's more than any reasonable person could spend in a lifetime.
His expression turned pensive.
Once I get the club off the ground, I'll make my own money, and I won't have to rely on his. It'll be a clean break once and for all.
He didn't mention Eduardo's theory about the will's loophole, and I didn't bring it up. You'll succeed, I said simply. Javier's answering smile was pure warmth, and later that night, when we lay sweaty and sated in each other's arms, I still felt the brush of it against my skin. For the first time since the fish died, I fell into a dreamless sleep.
Chapter 37. Javier.
Bad luck comes in threes. I'd been exposed to that superstition since I was a child, but no one ever defined the time period for when those three bad things happened. It could be a day, a week, a month, or in my case, 3 months. My father's death and new inheritance clause in October. Perry exposing our outing with Penn in November. That was two. But the relatively smooth period after the blog expose lulled me into a false sense of complacency. The issue with Penn and Rhea still hung over our heads, but at least Penn was in the city for the foreseeable future, and Rhea was taken care of until she found a new job. After Perry's social media takedowns and the unspoken but significant shift in my relationship with Sloane, namely the realization that I loved her but couldn't tell her lest I send her running for the hills, life resumed its normal pace. That was to say, it was batshit busy. Despite the upcoming holidays, work on the club was in full swing.
I'd hired a construction crew, plumbers, electricians, and everyone else I'd need to get it up to speed before Farrah could start on the actual design, and I was already knee-deep in grand opening plans by the time late December arrived. We were making good progress on the club, but it wasn't